The Tom Woods Show, episode 602.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, don't miss out on the event of the year. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise. That's right, it's the Contra Cruise, October 9th to 16th, 2016, aboard Royal Caribbean. Check it out at ContraCruise.com. Folks, if you are looking for more libertarian podcasts, then I recommend the Jason Stapleton program hosted by my friend Jason Stapleton. Monday through Friday, he gives you an hour's worth of libertarian analysis of the news of the day. Check it out at jasonstapleton.com. Hello, everybody. Back by popular demand is Scott Horton today, because I want to make sense of what's going on in Syria. We're reading about the ceasefire over there, and I want to get a handle on who the contending parties are, what the whole thing is all about, what it means for U.S. policy, all these sorts of questions I want to get answered, and I can't think of anybody I'd want to talk to about this more than Scott Horton, who is a favorite guest of the show. Scott is the host of Anti-War Radio on 90.7 FM KPFK in Los Angeles. He is also the host of The Scott Horton Show, which airs Monday through Friday, noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Liberty Radio Network at lrn.fm. Scott, hey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom.
It's been quite a while since we've talked to you, Scott. I think Syria is a good topic. It's in the news. It's always in the news. It's been in the news for years. It's all over the Republican debates. They're talking about Syria, and they're talking about the Syrian president and how terrible he is. We have to get rid of him and all that. So it's all over the news, so we have ample reason to discuss it. Before we talk about the ceasefire, I want to talk about – well, when I say I want to talk about it, I mean I want to have you talk about it. I want to hear about the different parties that are involved in this Syrian civil war, because, of course, we have – parties that are internal to Syria, and then we have major powers outside of Syria that, for one reason or another, think they have an interest in the outcome. So go through those one by one, and then we'll try and tackle what does each one of these stand to gain? What's their interest in the whole thing?
All right. Well, first of all, I think there's so much foreign intervention involved in the Syrian conflict from the beginning that it's actually inaccurate to even call it a civil war. I mean, clearly there are Syrians fighting, but you could just as easily call it an invasion by America's CIA and their lackeys. Since 2011, there's been covert operations, CIA covert operations, to try to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. And so that's first of all, and I'll try to get to the explain itself here in a sec. Basically, what happened is in Iraq War II, 2003, George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq, as we've discussed before on the show, it was a huge own goal from the point of view of American foreign policy, in that they gave the entire east of the country, basically, to the most Iranian-tied factions. All the land from Baghdad down to Kuwait is basically a satellite state of Iran now because of the invasion. So they decided finally in 2005 and 6 that, well, 2006 and 7, that, oops, we just screwed up and fought a giant war for Iran, and it wasn't supposed to work out this way, but they're the ones who benefited the most. So now we need to redirect towards Saudi Arabia, and that's the famous article by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker, is called The Redirection. And ever since then, starting with George W. Bush, and then the same policy continued through Barack Obama, they've basically been guilty of high treason in providing aid and comfort to literal al-Qaeda guys. And starting with Fatah al-Islam in Lebanon, various Muslim Brotherhood and al-Qaeda-tied groups in Syria, and again, we're going back to 2006 here, and Jundallah, which is a bin Ladenite group in eastern Iran. And the point of all of this is, and all of these guys being backed by the U.S. in cooperation with Saudi Arabia. And, of course, remember, the reason al-Qaeda hates us in the first place is because we're too good of friends with their governments, right? They're not from Iraq, Iran, and Syria, our axis of evil. They come from our allied states who hate us for propping up their dictators and being that close to them. So, but when it comes to the sectarian civil war across the entire region, the Saudis, aka the Americans, are perfectly happy to use these Al-Qaeda type groups, these bin Ladenite groups, as long as they can bludgeon Iran with them. So put yourself in George W. Bush's position in 2007. Well, I can't start the Iraq war all over again against the Shiites I just fought for. So consolation prize, let's overthrow Assad, or let's work on getting rid of Assad's only Arab allied government in the region, Bashar al-Assad's government in Syria. So then in 2011, the Arab Spring breaks out, in great part due to the destabilization wrought by Iraq War II in the first place. And Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama take the side of the bin Ladenites in Libya and in Syria. And they, you know, double, triple, quadruple down on George Bush's policy of backing bin Ladenites in Syria. And from the very beginning, from 2011 on, early 2011 on, there were reports beginning to come out about, CIA and Saudi Arabia shipping off Mujahideen to start the war to overthrow Assad in Syria. By the end of the year, and multiple reports, including our friend Eric Margulies, was reporting in the summer of 2011. I remember him coming on my show and explaining he'd just gotten back from France where, you know, Eric Margulies, for people who aren't familiar, is a very experienced war reporter. And he had just gotten back from France and had been talking with French intelligence and French special forces and said they are on the ground now as part of a NATO CIA regime change job, coordinating the rebels and trying to overthrow Assad. Barack Obama came out and said Assad must step down. Hillary Clinton tried to create these Friends of Syria groups to create governments in exile in Qatar to try to install and power there. And, I should mention, Phil Giraldi reported in December of 2011 that Obama had signed a new finding authorizing stepped-up covert action, CIA covert action, against Syria in order to overthrow Assad. And it's been clear, Tom, all this time. I mean, I don't speak Arabic. You don't have to be a real expert in the region. All you have to do is pay attention to this stuff as, you know, an average news consumer over a long enough period of time. And all of this is just right in front of your face. It's even in the New York Times and the Washington Post going back to 2012. That, guess what? All CIA efforts to arm moderate, quote unquote, rebels in Syria are only arming the jihadists. And the field has been dominated on the so-called rebel side by Al-Qaeda in Iraq, in Syria, which is also known as the Al-Nusra Front, but they're the Syrian veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq from Iraq War II. They have dominated the field the entire time. The Islamic State is only a breakoff group of that same Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the one that George W. Bush created by invading Iraq. I mentioned Iran inherited Eastern Iraq. Well, Western Iraq became Jihadistan, where the bin Ladenites triumphed more than anyone else. And then all the experts, the best journalists, people like Patrick Coburn, he was on my show for 2011, 2012, 2013, and in the beginning of 2014, saying, hey, man, the American and allied support, oh, and I should say that means Saudi, Qatar, Turkey, and Israel, our support, our side support for the Mujahideen Sunni-based insurgency in Syria is, quote, Patrick Coburn's quotes, re-energizing the insurgency in Iraq, the guys who are the bad guys that our guys fought for, 8 years there in Iraq War II against the Sunni-based insurgency. It's re-energizing them. And yes, the DIA, and I urge everybody to look up Brad Hoff and his great blog, LevantReport.com, where he has all the great write-ups on the DIA report predicting the rise of the Islamic State in 2012. But you didn't even need to be the DIA. You just had to be an expert guest under questioning on my show in 2012 and 13 to say that, yes, there is a very real possibility here that the United States of America could create that giant fake Islamo-fascist caliphate that was nothing but a lie in the fever daydreams of the George W. Bushies and of Osama bin Laden, whose caliphate was his attic where he was hiding from his wife as recently as 2011. 2011, his caliphate was one room on the third floor. And it's now a land the size of Great Britain that rules more people than more than half the nations in the UN. And, you know, I'm not saying, oh, God, so we have to be afraid of them. But I'm saying, you know, there was no such thing as this until George Bush ruined everything. And then Obama tripled it by taking the side of the bin Ladenites in Syria.
Let's go back, though, to just ticking down who exactly are the parties. Just give them to me one at a time. We've got al-Nusra. Who else?
Okay, well, al-Nusra, I think, are pretty much the strongest force on the ground on the side of the rebels. And then you have the Islamic State that rules the city of Raqqa and much of eastern Syria. And then you have Ahrar al-Sham, which is just another name for al-Qaeda, really. It's just another – it's basically, you know, the so-called moderate front who are acceptable – you know, for the Americans to be the arms dealers. We, you know, through the Saudis, we arm and finance these guys, and then they turn around and give all the guns and money to al-Nusra and fight under al-Nusra. But it's just like, you know, in Iraq War II, where you had this widespread Sunni-based insurgency, and al-Qaeda in Iraq was the smallest part of it. Well, in Syria, al-Qaeda in Iraq completely dominates, or that is al-Nusra, completely dominates the insurgency, and the other factions are the minority parties, you know, fighting under them. So Ahrar al-Sham and Jaish al-Islam and the few other, I don't know if the al-Farouk Brigade and Northern Storm Brigades even exist anymore. There was the al-Hazm Brigade. Basically, these are just mythical moderates who are not really moderate, but they don't carry the brand name al-Qaeda, and therefore it makes it easier for the U.S., Turkey, and Saudi to give them guns and that kind of thing. But basically, when they say mythical moderates, all they mean is non-ISIS al-Qaeda in Syria. Ahrar al-Sham and al-Nusra are basically indistinguishable from themselves, and any other so-called mythical moderate groups pale in comparison in numbers and power to them and are basically irrelevant. And then on the other side, you have the Ba'athist, basically fascist government in Damascus, which is backed by Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah. And they're basically the ones that the Americans have been trying to overthrow all of this time until the Russians last fall called our bluff and said, you know, when the Army of Conquest, which is just another name for al-Nusra and Ahrar al-Sham, when they made major successes in the Idlib province and threatened the major highway between, between Aleppo and Damascus, that was when Vladimir Putin said, that's it, line crossed, and he launched an air war, basically calling Obama's bluff that you cannot have your regime change here. He's going to back the Syrian state. And, you know, when you want to get to the – oh, well, I'm sorry. We'll get back to the insanity and the ironies here in a second. Well, here. Yes. So who's on Assad's side? I mentioned Iran and Hezbollah and Russia. Well, guess who else is fighting for Assad right now? The Iraqi Shiite militias, the Badr Brigade, which America fought for 8 years in Iraq War II, which America fought for and with in the Battle of Ramadi just 2 months ago. America is still, ever since 2003, fighting for Iran's auxiliary Iraqi army, the Badr Brigade. And that policy continues to this day. We just helped them take the city of Ramadi from the Islamic State in Iraq at the same time they're fighting against our guys in Syria. And now you want to make it even more complicated than that? Guess what, Tom? The military, our Pentagon, is arming and backing the Syrian Kurds, who in the last week have gone to war against the CIA-backed bin Ladenite terrorists. And so now in our, you know, six-way fight here and whatever, we have in two different ways at the same time, we have America backing both sides of this war. We're backing the our Shiite allies from Iraq are fighting for our Shiite enemies in Syria, and our Kurdish allies in Syria are fighting against our Sunni allies in Syria.
All right. I don't even know how to make any sense of all this, but I'm sure I'm not alone in that. Here's what I want to ask you. Do you know what the John McCain / Lindsey Graham position is on Syria? And if so, how does it differ from the existing policy towards Syria?
Well, their position is that Obama hasn't gone far enough. This is the Hillary Clinton position and the Marco Rubio position as well, that Assad must go and that he is the reason for the fight. In other words, let me try to make it an analogy here. It's kind of a rough one. But if we were the British talking about intervening in the American Civil War, the argument would be, well, we've got to overthrow Lincoln first, because after all, that's what the Southerners are fighting about. And so as British interventionists, if we want to crush the Confederacy, our first stop is the North. Huh? That's what they're arguing, that Assad is the reason that the Islamic State exists. Not all their support for this Mujahideen war for the last 5 years, but Assad, who they're fighting against, he's their motivation. So we got to overthrow him. Now, who's supposed to replace him other than the al-Nusra Front in Syria? I've never heard a straight answer on that question in my life, Tom, honestly. And the real answer is it'll be al-Qaeda. If they overthrow the Assad and the Ba'athist state there, then next come the head choppers. Because right now the state is backed by a coalition of all the different kinds of Christians, the Druze, the Shiite Arabs, the Alawites, and a great many of the Sunnis, at least a plurality, if not a majority of the Sunnis, support the state as well. But if the state is broken and the Syrian army is scattered, then that's just the beginning of chapter two of this thing. That'll just be, you know, all hell only now breaking loose once Damascus falls and you know, beheadings all the way around. So that's why people would side with the Ba'athist state at all in the first place, is that it's the only thing standing between them and a good beheading, and they know it. I mean, the closest thing to an answer I've ever heard from a Republican or a Democrat on this is what's supposed to happen after Assad falls. A Republican I saw on CNN, a congressman, said, well, at that point, we hope someone will come to the fore. Yeah. That's going to be great.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's terrible. All right. I want to ask you in just a minute, what in all this really could possibly be the U.S. interest? But first, let's pause for a word from our sponsor. Folks, I get a lot of requests from people. What am I going to listen to when I'm all done listening to the Tom Woods Show? What else is out there that I can listen to that will nourish me as a libertarian? And one answer I give is the Jason Stapleton program. It's hosted by my friend Jason Stapleton. Jason's been a guest on this show, and he runs that show Monday through Friday, just like me. But his show is an hour long every single day, and he sticks to current events. And he has a knack for taking complicated issues and explaining them in ways that the non-specialist can understand. So whether it's gun control or citizenship or the Greek bailout or some more technical and complex questions like that, he can explain it in a way that you can go out and argue the case with confidence. I was looking at some recent iTunes reviews of the Jason Stapleton program, and I found this one. There are many shows available that claim to enrich your life. The Jason Stapleton program actually delivers. Check it out at jasonstapleton.com. All right, we've been talking about this, and you've been talking about just how convoluted the whole Syrian story is from the point of view of the U.S. intervention. The U.S. is just all over the map here. So it leads me to the much more fundamental question, why does this matter to the U.S. at all? And of course, the quick answer would be it doesn't. But I mean, why did the American policymakers think it matters?
Well, okay, so those are a few different things. Yes, absolutely. From the point of view of a national interest, meaning including the 300-something million of us who live here, no, there is no interest of ours that's being represented here whatsoever. You know, maybe our morals and principles are being exploited in a way when they say, oh, we have to go and save the poor people and that kind of thing. But that certainly has nothing to do with the motivation here. The imperial interest, you know, it's just like with the Iraq thing, and this is really the lesson of Iraq War II, is that there were 20 reasons, and none of them were good enough by 10 miles, right? But it was a lot of little, not good enough reasons to start a war, and that kind of confluence of interest. So in this case, you know, Obama even explained to Jeffrey Goldberg at the Atlantic magazine in 2012 that this is kind of a sop to Israel, that yes, he insists on pursuing a nuclear deal with Iran, but you know what? As a consolation prize, we'll help weaken Assad in Syria, which will help weaken Iran's influence. And, you know, geez, yes, you're right, Jeffrey Goldberg. If we could get rid of him, that would be a great way to take Iran down a peg. And of course, you know, at least in the Likudnik imagination, and maybe for real, it would mean an end or a break in Iranian and Syrian support for Hezbollah on Israel's northern border in southern Lebanon there. And so Obama just said that, yes, this is, you know, and they gave a little bit of a sop to human rights and this and that. But they made it pretty clear that, you know, this was basically a way to, you know, kind of like I said about from George Bush's position back in 06, that this is a consolation prize. After empowering Iran, this is a way to take them down on a different peg, if not the original one where we accidentally, where George Bush accidentally had propped them up so high. So there's that. And now there's a great article that just came out yesterday in Politico magazine by RFK Jr., and it's all about the pipeline politics and how Saudi and Qatar and Turkey all wanted to build this pipeline that would go through Syria, and how Assad in 2006 had said no, because that would hurt the Russians and they're our friends, and so we don't want to hurt their interest. And it's in the WikiLeaks. Everyone pause and give thanks to Chelsea Manning, doing 35 years in the brig right now for our government sins. Who exposed in the WikiLeaks, in the State Department cables, that this, you know, completely set off the empire, that, you know, Assad may be useful for, you know, torturing Al-Qaeda guys for us and that kind of thing, but if he's going to stand in the way of this pipeline deal, then we're going to get him. And so that was really a big part of it. Now, in RFK's article, I think he makes the whole thing about the pipeline plan. And I think he kind of oversimplifies it. And in fact, I think if you read the article, you'll notice after 5,000 words or so at the end that his conclusion paragraphs are a little bit sketchy about just exactly how these facts influence those decisions. So it's not everything. However, I think I would certainly recommend it as a great little history of, well, American intervention in Syria since World War II, but especially pipeline politics through Syria in the 21st century, and how Assad's refusal to go along with the Saudis, the Turks, and the Qataris certainly helped to explain their animus toward them. And then, of course, again, with the Israelis, it's always about Hezbollah and always about Iran, whether Hezbollah is really a threat to Israel or whether Iran is really a threat to them or not. And Michael Oren, the former ambassador, Netanyahu's ambassador to the United States, has made it clear on numerous occasions in an interview with the Jerusalem Post, in two separate letters that he wrote to the Wall Street Journal, and plus in an interview that you can find on YouTube, where he's talking with Jeffrey Goldberg, in fact, at an Aspen Fancy Pants forum thing there. All you have to do is type in Oren, O-R-E-N, and Sunnis. Oren and Sunnis, and the YouTube will come right up, where he explains, and this is right after the establishment of the Islamic State. This is in June of 2014, the same month that Baghdadi declared himself the caliph and conquered Mosul. And Michael Oren says to Jeffrey Goldberg that, look, even though they're horrible, even though they just massacred thousands of prisoners in the field, even though they do head choppings and suicide bombings, he makes it very clear. He's not talking about any mythical moderates. He's talking about the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda in Syria, the worst of the Sunni jihadists, the bin Ladenites. And he's saying, still look at who they're up against, Assad, who's backed by Iran. And so then he goes on to blame every single death on both sides and all sides of the war on Assad, which is a typical, you know, talking point that they use, try to blame all casualties on the one side. And then And then he falsely accuses Iran of having military nuclear technology, as he calls it. So those are his two excuses, two huge lies. But for why Israel prefers that, as he put it, the Sunni evil should prevail over the Shiite evil, because they're backed by Iran. And so there's the Saudi, you know, the allied interest. And honestly, I think Obama's interest is just appeasing the Saudis and the Israelis and the Turks.
All right. I want to ask you before I forget, because this was part of the reason I want to have you on. What's the deal with the ceasefire? Are all the parties to the violence a party to the ceasefire? And I ask that knowing that the answer is no. So what does it all mean?
Right. Okay. Well, even the official, you know, headline version is that no, all parties are not involved. The two biggest, again, the most dominant jihadist factions, al-Nusra, which is just al-Qaeda, still loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City, and the Islamic State, which is ruled by Baghdadi, the caliph, and all of that, they're not party to the treaty whatsoever, to the ceasefire whatsoever. Arar al-Sham, which is, again, nothing but also al-Qaeda, they are a party to it. And yet, who actually has the ability to make them ceasefire? Maybe the Saudis. But do the Saudis even have an interest in seeing that through? And does America even have the influence with Saudi anymore to insist that they insist that Arar al-Sham cease fire? I don't buy it. So, in other words, on the Russian side, if Lavrov says, I promise I will have Iran and Hezbollah and Assad cease fire, we can pretty much take that to the bank. They have a chain of command that is answerable to the Kremlin when it comes to this anyway. I'm not saying on every single thing, but if you look at what happened in 2013, Putin told Assad, give up your chemical weapons. And he said, sir, yes, sir, whatever you say. And he gave them up in order to avoid the American bombing there back then. So there's every reason to believe, I would think, that the Assad side of this, the Russian side of this, have the ability to force a ceasefire. But American support is for a bunch of bin Ladenite suicide bomber lunatics. How the hell are they supposed to control them? Pardon me. How the heck are they supposed to control them, Tom? I don't think that they can. I don't think that that John Kerry's in any position to promise a ceasefire from Arar al-Sham. And if he can't promise one from al-Nusra and the Islamic State, what good is it anyway? I mean, are we now supposed to believe that the so-called mythical moderates and Arar al-Sham that fight with al-Nusra every day, all day for the last 5 years, that these guys are going to now turn on al-Nusra and help Assad and Hezbollah and Iran and Russia fight against al-Nusra and ISIS and kick them out of Syria? I don't think so. I mean, maybe the plan would be to just completely stab them in the back and leave them absolutely high and dry and let Assad and Russia finish them off, just as well as, you know, Nusra and ISIS when they get around to that. Although I don't know if John Kerry can get away with that level of betrayal, because, see, you know, the Turks, I don't know so much about the Saudis, but the Turks seem willing to possibly invade and especially to attack the Syrian Kurds that America and Russia are both backing right now, but who, of course, are the biggest threat to the Turks, because the YPG, the Syrian Kurdish faction, is, of course, allied with the PKK Kurds inside Turkey, who want independence there. And so there's so many competing interests at stake here. You know, some of the more hyperbolic of us have been warning that this could, in effect, lead to a real war between the United States and Russia, even though on the face of it, we're on the same side against the Islamic State is priority number one, right? Obama already backed down on getting rid of Assad, right? And the Islamic State is the enemy, and yet our allies, the Turks, have already shot down one Russian jet and have threatened to attack the Russian-backed Kurds inside Syria. So, you know, and what Obama would do about that, I don't know. But at least, you know, in fact, I think it was Patrick Coburn, a very credible reporter, had it the other day. And I'm not sure what the original source was, but they said that Obama was on the phone with Erdogan, that's the president of Turkey, was on the phone with him for an hour and a half trying to convince him that you have to back down here. And if you start a war with Russia, presumably he told them, you know, we're not honoring a NATO obligation if you start a conflict, you know, but this is the level of nonsense that we're dealing with here, where our NATO allies could get us into a war with Russia over something that, again, is no interest of the actual American people whatsoever.
Scott, one more thing before I let you go. I know, obviously, you're not a Donald Trump supporter, but I just remember in – it was either the last debate or the one before that, he kept saying over and over again in his opposition to involvement in Syria, he kept saying, we're backing people in Syria. We don't even know who they are. Mm-hmm. Now, when you hear something like that, is he right, or is it the case that, in fact, we know all too well who they are?
Yeah, exactly. I would say that is really the case. We do know who they are. And, you know, like Golani, the leader of the al-Nusra Front, is still sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri. There's no question about who he is. He's the leader of al-Qaeda in Syria. And so, but, you know, that's the most, Donald Trump puts it in the most polite way possible. But the thing is about him, though, Tom, is the other day, I think it was the day after the last big debate there, when they interviewed him in a press conference, I guess it was, he said, yeah, we could do a safe zone in Syria. And he's just, you know, with a wave of his hand and a shrug, he changes his position from let's stay out of that mess to let's carve out a safe zone. Well, safe zone, that is what Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton support. It means invading Syria, carving out a giant chunk of it, threatening the Russians that they better not fly their planes anywhere near it, and carving out a space for those very same people that he says he doesn't know who they are to gather.
Yeah, no,
and protection from the Syrian state. Now, I don't know if he means it, but he's willing to just flip-flop around on a whim like it's nothing.
Of course. Of course. I mean, that seems to be his way in a lot of areas. My instinct is that this stuff about Syria is not really where his heart is. I don't think he really cares about it. I think he wants his agenda regarding trade and immigration. Those are his two things. I think those are things that he wouldn't flip-flop on. But this, I don't think he's engaged in it. I don't think it really matters that much to him. So that he could go from one to the other just like that. Whereas somebody like Marco Rubio, I know for a fact that he's going to take the Lindsey Graham line and stick to it.
Right.
You know. So Trump's an odd case, precisely because he's not a politician. You know, he can go from one position to the other in 24 hours, and you don't know what in the world is going to – I mean, figuring him out is like trying to figure out Pope Francis. You know, I give up at this point. I give up. I have too many other things that I want to do to try to trace out a consistent lineage of thought from these people. All right, that's enough for today. I'm going to link to – you sent me one piece, although it's from a couple of weeks ago. We probably need some stuff since the ceasefire, but we'll get some good information about Syria up there. Ron Paul did a video on it recently. This will be at tomwoods.com/602. I do want you to say a little something about your own show before we finally do part for today.
All right. Well, thanks very much again for having me. I'm on the Liberty Radio Network from noon to 2 Eastern Time. That's libertyradionetwork.com. And my own website is scotthorton.org. Basically, I interview journalists. I have my own say as well, but mostly it's an interview show and primarily just, you know, libertarian foreign policy stuff. And all the archives, more than 4,000 interviews now, are all at scotthorton.org.
And really, there just isn't, you know, we have libertarian think tanks that have policy wonks who do, you know, U.S. foreign policy, but it's always... maybe not always, but pretty darn close to always, written and spoken in the language of the bad guys. It's always, well, you know, U.S. interests, blah, blah, blah. That's not the way – that's the way politicians talk. That's the way Washington talks, not the way we should talk. You just tell it like it is. There's no mamby-pamby, well, the U.S. should change its policy by 38%, or there's none of that. In the libertarian world, with the exception of antiwar.com, There's very, very little foreign policy commentary. I mean, we've got Daniel McAdams now with the Ron Paul Institute, but It's still slim pickings. And you've been out there year after year after year with that Scott Horton Show, which is why I am very glad to make a donation to the Scott Horton Show every single month, because I value – even when I don't get a chance to listen, I'm glad you're there. And I hope other people will feel the same way, that even if they can't listen to you every single day – they're glad you're there. They want you to stay there doing what you're doing. So scotthorton.org is where I'd like people to go visit. And Scott, we're going to have you on more often. It's my fault for not reaching out to you. So we'll get you back on soon. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for today. Guess what's coming up tomorrow? Guess what's – take a wild guess. It is another debate analysis episode. Lou Rockwell will be joining me once again. Only 5 candidates remain. So we'll see if there's anything interesting that takes place on that debate stage. But whether there is or there isn't, we're going to have a lot of fun chit-chatting about it tomorrow morning here on the show in episode number 603. So I hope you'll tune in for that, and thanks so much for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.